Consumer prices are up.
But this time, consumers have something to say about it.
From APM, American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. Happy Friday the 13th, Jeremy.
Oh, happy scary, freaky Friday the 13th, Steve.
We're going to dig into this morning's numbers on consumer prices coming up.
We'll also explore what could be a silver lining in the European debt crisis.
And cyber thieves target the little guy, too.
Those stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
The government said today prices at the consumer level continue to rise slightly, but is the 0.4% increase in the consumer price index enough to make anyone nervous about inflation, which, by the way, is at its highest level in 2.5 years? Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch, and she's with us from New York, as she is every Friday. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
So what do these incremental rises month after month tell us about inflation?
Well, we know that prices are up. They're up 3.2% from a year ago. Part of that increase is healthy. The economy is growing again. It's part of what the Fed wanted to do to kind of get inflation cooking because they were scared of deflation. But as we know, part of that, probably half of it, is because of gas prices.
And healthy, you say, but what about wages? Are people making more money to match?
Well, I think that's the painful part of this report, because while prices are rising, wages aren't moving that much. In fact, that employment report last week told us average hourly earnings were only up 1.9% over the last year. So we made 1.9% more, but things are up by 3.2%. That's why consumers are hurting.
Jill Schlesinger from CBS Money Watch. Jill, thanks.
Great to be with you.
Let's get another take from our other regular Friday guest now, Chris Lowe. He's chief economist with FTN Financial, and he joins us now. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So this slight rise in consumer prices, we've been seeing this for many months. Is this the same old gas and food prices are going up story?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a broken record, but it's absolutely what it is. Excluding those prices, we're up 0.2. But boy, those gas prices especially just keep rising every month.
And yet, Chris, gasoline futures plunged this week. Investors who invest in gasoline, those prices went down. What does that say?
Well, that's right. Earlier this week, the Department of Energy reported a rise in gasoline inventories. It was a big surprise because there's a bunch of refineries down in Texas that are suffering from rolling blackouts, which means for inventories to be up, people are buying less. That means a change in consumer behavior. It means it's having that this price increase is having an effect on economic activity.
And I have to say, when we talk about prices going up, 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 and then all of a sudden going down again, it reminds me of 2008, right before the financial crisis. Isn't that what happened with oil prices then?
It is, but I don't think it plays out the same way this time. And the reason is, you'll notice, well, down big this week, that's because speculators are backing away. They're just not willing to play the same kind of brinksmanship games they did last time, partly because they lost their shirts in 08.
They sure did, and a lot of other people, too. Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Now to some other news. The Social Security and Medicare Board of Trustees will come out with its annual report today. The last report from the trustees said Medicare would be insolvent by 2029, and Social Security would be out of money just a few years after that. Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports now from the health desk at WHYY. The two programs are very different from one another.
Medicare and Social Security seem to work the same. You pay now and get the benefit later. But there's a big difference, says health economist Stuart Altman.
The difference is Social Security only guarantees a certain amount of money. Medicare, on the other hand, commits to providing all the health care that is covered in the Medicare benefit package.
So while Social Security checks have to keep up with inflation, Medicare has to cover inflation plus the rising cost of health care. Gene Sturley with the Urban Institute has written several books on Social Security. He says, take a married couple with average wages retiring today.
They would have Social Security benefits that roughly equal the taxes they paid. But in Medicare, they're still going to be getting about 3 times the benefits relative to the taxes that they paid.
3 times? That's an incredible deal.
Yeah, that's been an incredible deal.
And depending on how the politics works out, it might be one of those limited-time-only deals. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
The arts and crafts store chain Michaels says a debit card security breach is bigger than initial reports. It has affected customers in at least 20 states. Thieves managed to steal customer debit cards and PIN numbers from checkout terminals. And the fact that we're talking debit cards and not credit cards makes all the difference, as Marketplace's Janet Babin reports.
Michaels stores are still investigating how it happened, but some Michaels debit card customers noticed hundreds of dollars missing from their bank accounts. Getting that cash back will be much tougher than if they had used a credit card to make their purchase.
A lot of consumers think plastic's plastic, and that ain't true.
That's Curtis Arnold with CardRatings.com. He says if fraud's committed with your credit card, you're only liable for up to $50, and even that fee is usually waived. But with debit cards?
You can be vulnerable for up to $50, even reporting it within 2 days. And then if you report it within 60 days, you can still be vulnerable for up to $500.
Wait longer than 60 days, and you could be forced to eat the entire loss. Arnold says debit card fraud has expanded recently as credit card security has tightened. Debit cards will probably get more federal protections when a new consumer watchdog agency goes live this summer. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Profit rose by 25% at upscale department store Nordstrom, but it lowered its outlook.
And Airbus says it is ramping up production of its medium-sized A320 plane. That's the one that competes with Boeing's 737. Airbus says it's doing this because airlines are looking for more fuel-efficient aircraft to offset high fuel prices.
More numbers anytime at our website, marketplace.org. Just check out the numbers section.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective, European economies are reporting a bit of a rebound today. Germany said its gross domestic product rose 1.5% in the first quarter. France up 1%, and even bailed out Greece showed a little growth.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London to talk about it. Stephen, Germany seems to be the star performer here. Why is it doing so well?
Exports and retail spending. The Germans are pouring their cars and their machinery into China, and the boom has spread into the economy back home. Unemployment's fallen sharply, and the Germans are shopping.
How does Germany, Stephen, compare to those infamous economies in the southern region?
Well, you mentioned Greece, which rather surprisingly, after a year of recession, is bouncing back a little bit. But the rest of the southern Eurozone is not looking too hot. Italy barely growing, Spain not doing much better, and Portugal in recession. The message here, says German economist Holger Schmieding, is that unlike the southerners, the Germans knuckled down and put their economic house in order.
They did cut public spending and they reformed the labor market and the welfare system. It took a few years of pain, but after the pain, they are now seeing the gain.
And that's the message the Germans have been preaching to those heavily indebted Southerners. But there's a paradox here, Steve. Part of the reason that Germany's exports have boomed is because the euro's been pushed down by all the worries about a default in Europe. So while the Germans grumble about having to bail out the Greeks, the Irish and the Portuguese, Germany has actually profited from the eurozone debt crisis.
Quite the irony. All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Over the past few years, China has grown as an important market for luxury goods. Soon, the Chinese will have the chance to drink some homegrown bubbly, thanks to an investment by a historic French champagne maker. From Paris, here's the BBC's Hugh Schofield.
Moët Chandon, part of the LVMH luxury goods group, will plant a new vineyard in the northwestern Chinese province of Ningxia. The area was chosen because climatic conditions are similar to those in the Champagne region of France. Simon Field is champagne buyer for the independent wine merchants Berry Brothers and Rudd. He says it won't ever be champagne, but it could come close.
The two key features are latitude and, of course, the soil. You need a chalky, easy-draining soil, which is virtually unique in Champagne, which is why it's such a hallowed, protected area.
It's not the first time a great French wine name has started production in China. Chateau Lafite Rothschild did the same 2 years ago. The first Chinese bubbly will come on stream in 3 years. But attention, It will not be sold as champagne. That name belongs exclusively to the original French variety of sparkling wine. You see, real champagne is grown only in a small area of northern France around the town of Reims. In Paris, I'm the BBC's Hugh Schofield for Marketplace.
Now to Silicon Valley, where a big rivalry is getting a little more intense. Google and Facebook have been fighting for talent, and they've been fighting for ad revenue. There's a battle now for public perception. Well, yesterday, Facebook admitted it secretly hired a public relations firm to plant ugly stories about Google in newspapers and on blogs. Marketplace's David Gura reports now on the ethics of corporate PR.
In PR, the goal is to get people to believe your story. Carl Howe is an analyst with the Yankee Group. He says Facebook took a page from Microsoft's PR playbook. When that company faced antitrust allegations in the 90s, it tried a technique called astroturfing.
It's fake grassroots. They're trying to indicate that there's a groundswell that people are against this, but it really was just entirely artificial.
According to Howe, Facebook and Google have two different visions of the future, and each company thinks it's right. He says Facebook's PR firm, Burson Marsteller, just did what PR firms do.
There's an old story that there's no bad PR because people talk about you.
But Paul Argenti disagrees. He teaches corporate communications at Dartmouth.
No, it's not really true. There is bad PR, and this is definitely it.
The real loser here, he says, isn't Facebook or Google. It's the public relations industry.
You already thought public relations was kind of a sleazy profession. This didn't help to change your mind.
Argenti says that when competition heats up, strange things happen. But PR firms have to be transparent and ethical. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Her hat, Jeremy, made such a splash at William and Kate's royal wedding. Do you remember the Princess Beatrice?
I have to admit, Steve, I did not watch the royal wedding, but I've heard about this Beatrice hat. There have been a lot of
just
things.
Something else. It really is. And now she's auctioning this hat on eBay for charity, I think for UNICEF and some other children's charities. The blush-colored bonnet that stands at least a foot tall, I'm trying to describe it now for radio listeners. It does.
Oh,
it's at least a foot tall. Some people have said it looks like a toilet seat. Others have said it looks like something could like fly out of the hole in the middle of it. It's now garnered a lot of bids on eBay, and bids worthy of what, $9,200 so far.
Wow.
That's as of Friday morning. So the hat also has a Facebook page. So William and Kate hadn't even finished their nuptials, and this hat had a Facebook page with
Is it like the Aretha fans. Remember the Aretha Franklin inauguration?
Yeah. Absolutely, a famous hat right there, or infamous. We have links, by the way, to the eBay page, to the Facebook page, and of course pictures of that hat at our website, marketplace.org.
Proof that you can sell just about anything these days.
Just about anything. On Monday, former Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff and the FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski will join representatives from Symantec and McAfee at a roundtable on cybersecurity in small business. You might think only big companies are susceptible to cyber attacks, but Marketplace Tech Report host John Moe is here to tell us otherwise. Good morning, John.
Hey, Steve.
I can't help but think about Sony, which took a big PR hit with their hacks and the breach of their systems there. What happens with smaller businesses, John?
Well, a security breach for a small business isn't going to show up in the newspaper the way it did for Sony, but it definitely shows up at the bank. The FCC is saying that each cyber attack costs a small or mid-sized business an average of $200,000, which if you're a small business, you know, that's not exactly coins in your penny jar.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
There's the detective work that goes into it. There's the work to eliminate the intruder and patch up that vulnerability. A recent report that I read said 85% of all businesses have had some type of security breach. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge problem, and it seems to be just getting worse.
And what can business owners do to avoid getting hit by these cyber thieves?
Pray, hope, hold on to something
stable.
Is that
it, really?
You know, the problem is that the attacks are getting more sophisticated. The defenses are getting more sophisticated, although they're having a hard time because they're just reacting to the attacks. You know, we talked to the FCC about this. They said they're going to be offering some partnerships for small businesses to be a part of, some consultancies, some networks that they can kind of tap into to get expertise. But make no mistake, there's a huge war going on right now, and it's not just the big companies that are being hit. It's everybody.
And what about you and I? What can we do to keep an eye on all this?
I keep looking for this hopeful note to bring to the interview, Steve, and I really wish I could bring a more hopeful note.
You're kind of Debbie Downer today, John.
I'm trying my best. But, you know, it's best to use a different password everywhere you go. Change those passwords all the time. Keep your antivirus software updated. Common sense stuff. But really, the best thing you can do, Steve, is to never take the approach of, well, it's never going to happen to me. It's likely already happened at a place you do business with.
Marketplace Tech Report host John Moe. John, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Tomorrow, Steve, is your favorite day of the year, International Migratory
Bird
Day.
Oh, I got to get a card. Yes.
It's a day that celebrates our feathered friends who, in some cases, journey thousands of miles in search of food or maybe better weather. But sometimes those birds decide to make a pit stop at a very expensive hotel. Sabri Benishour from station WAMU in Washington, D.C. has our story.
Not too far from the Capitol building, the District of Columbia Department of Transportation is building a footbridge over some railroad tracks for a park trail. At least, it was.
An interesting turn of events is the best way I can describe it.
That's project manager Gloria Jeff, and the interesting turn of events is sitting on top of their crane. Dan Rauch is looking at it through some binoculars.
Oh, here comes one of the other adults into the nest now. 4.5-foot wingspan.
A pair of ospreys, large birds of prey, have built a 4-foot nest atop the crane. Rauch is a biologist with the district's Department of the Environment.
Unfortunately, it thought it was just a tree, so it's got a great view of the river. They're safe from predators, so it's a perfect place for a nest.
Yeah, perfect for the osprey. Not quite as perfect for construction. The birds are protected by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. They may have flown in from as far away as the Amazon to sit on this crane. So this crane isn't going anywhere for a couple months while the eggs hatch and the chicks learn to fly. District's Department of Transportation and Gloria Jeff say they're totally cool with this.
It has posed an opportunity for us to partner with nature.
But outside of Washington, man and bird don't always flock together. Yanni Salonen owns Salonen Construction in northern Florida, where a pair of ospreys built a nest on a crane on his barge.
The out-of-pocket expense was like $38,000. That's what the equipment rentals and the payroll.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will grant exceptions where human or bird safety is at risk, so Salonen applied for a waiver. But when he didn't get it, he just relocated the nest himself with help from the Audubon Society.
There'll be some penalties coming, but, you know, figured out what all that will be.
D.C. biologist Dan Rauch says there's a reason for the strong protections afforded migratory birds. He points to the passenger pigeon, a bird so numerous it used to blacken the sky for days as it migrated. In 1914, the last one in the history of the planet died in the Cincinnati Zoo. And so in the scheme of things, says park ranger Jim Rosenstock,
a little thing like a trail project might need to have its schedule modified.
In Washington, D.C., I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
And by the way, you can see a photo of those D.C. osprey at our website, marketplace.org.
And finally, Steve, to Broadway here in New York, where I'm sure you've heard about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Yeah.
Well, it reopened last night after a 3.5-week overhaul.
Oh, it was a mess, wasn't it? Yeah.
Now, we're talking about a $70 million production of Spider-Man that, of course, has been plagued by injuries and mechanical malfunctions. Well, according to reports, last night's show went over without any major glitches. But in fairness, it was also the 146th preview performance of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. I guess the thought must be if the show actually never opens, it would be hard for it to be closed.
That is one takeaway.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Jeremy, have a great weekend.
You too.
This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI?
I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.